Hello, everybody, and welcome to week actual 100 of Turning Towards Life. This is Lizzie and Justin on a Sunday morning, as usual these days, showing up here to talk about wonderful things together. We are 100 weeks into this extraordinary thing that we're doing, and maybe you've joined us at week 100 and you're learning about who we are and what we're doing here. And if so, you're very welcome. You may have been here since the beginning of this little foray of ours. And we are so grateful for everybody's support and the response that we're getting and the statistics that we're seeing about how many people to listening to the podcast and also watching on Facebook when we're live. So everyone is very welcome here. And Justin's chosen this extraordinary source for the day, which is called Why Tinkerbell Gave Up Anger Management. And since I read it, I've been really reflecting on the whole thing and feeling very inspired by it as well. So, Justin, thank you for bringing this source for us today.
You're so welcome, Lizzie. I'm really pleased to be here. I can't believe it's week 100. I also want to add my welcome to everybody who joins us and is joining us. Such a thing, Lizzie, as you know, that for us, that you and I have turned up for 100 weeks. But I know also lots of other people turn up again and again and again and have made joining us part of their practice. So welcome to all of you. Like Lizzie says, whether this is week one or week 100, I'm just having to do something on my computer here so that people are texting me so it doesn't pop up. So I want to introduce this source. I came across, I was bought this book, Fierce Fairy Tales and Other Stories to Stir Your Soul by Nikita Gill. And this was bought for me as a gift by someone, Lizzie, who has been on our professional coaching course at the end of the year. Mm. This was a gift to me. And it's wonderful. It turns out Nikita Gill is an extraordinary poet and writer, and she has a huge, 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 huge following. And it's a book of rewriting the way that we see a lot of the characters, particularly women in, but and men in fairy tales in new light. And here we go. This is called Why Tinkerbell Gave Up Anger Management. I had to give up on their remedies. They kept trying to make me less angry, but I refuse to surrender my rage. Because whole kingdoms have already spent millennia trying to keep women subdued, only to be discarded in old age. My fury gets things done. It has saved lives. It has made the world listen. Where I could not speak, my anger has screamed. Think Helen of Troy when they took her freedom. Think the Rani of Jhansi leading rebellions. Think Joan of Arc leading armies on what she dreamed. So now I love my tinderbox heart, so easy to light up. All it takes is half a spark. A woman's anger can change the world. I know mine can. And this is not a gift I will give away. I am small. And I am angry. It is how I channel my energy, and I like me that way.
I had to give up on their remedies. They kept trying to make me less angry, but I refused to surrender my rage. Because whole kingdoms have already spent millennia trying to keep women subdued, only to be discarded in old age. My fury gets things done. It has saved lives. It has made the world listen where I could not speak. My anger has screamed. Think Helen of Troy when they took her freedom. Think the Rani of Jhansi leading rebellions. Think Joan of Arc leading armies on what she dreamed. So now I love my tinderbox heart. So easy to light up. All it takes is half a spark. A woman's anger can change the world. I know mine can, and this is not a gift I will give away. I am small, and I am angry. It is how I channel my energy, and I like me that way. Just reading that makes me kind of feel ignited.
Mm.
It's really the way it's written. It feels like I can feel in the way as well as the what it's intending. It's really beautiful.
I thought it was about time that we spoke about anger. We've talked about guilt and shame and love and sorrow and fear and all kinds of things, and we haven't talked about anger so much. And one of the things that really struck me about this was it's clearly about both men and women, as other sources that we've read about that appear to be about one or the other are always about both. And I've been thinking a lot about how for many of us the culture in which we live, what a tricky relationship we have with anger.
Mm.
That tends to do one of two things, and it there is a gender part of it and there's a everyone part of it. And it seemed to me that there's one part of it which is that for some of us in the world, that we might be angry at all is dismissed, sidelined. Just like Tinkerbell here, we're encouraged to pretend that it's not true, to act as if this was never a possibility, and to be ashamed of our own anger when it shows up. And that particularly applies to women, but it also applies to men in a particular way as well. And the whole situation that we get into with that then distorts anger, so that there's no, the way I was thinking about it, Lizzie, was there's very little room in our culture for what I'm going to call mature anger, rather than the kind of reactive sort of fly off the handle anger, the kind of anger which comes from some deep value that is really important here has got transgressed, and corrective action needs to be taken, or at least a voice needs to be had about it. And this whole great big situation that Nikita Gill is pointing into so beautifully is that, in a way, the only thing this allows is a kind of immaturity around anger, which really poisons anger for all of us. Like, it robs it of its wisdom.
Yeah, I mean, like you, when I read it, somehow, it keeps bubbling up. Just not that I've intended to try and think about this or something, but since you posted it, every now and again, this thing popped into my mind around the way we behave around it and towards it and in response to it determines whether the intelligence it's trying to bring gets to be brought, or whether it just gets shut down. And inside relationship, what it takes to be, it's a tricky one because it can be quite traumatizing when someone's angry with me, you know, with somebody. And so then we get angry too. And it's like this kind of double whammy happens of kind of things perpetuate one another, and it can end up really huge. But it made me think of this little thing I saw. Well, it was a big thing I saw in when we were recently on holiday with my sister. My husband and my sister had a bit of a discussion together about something, and my sister said, "I'm so angry." And she carried on chopping something that she was chopping. And Matthew, my husband, went and they had a chat about, he'd said something and it made her really angry and it triggered something really big in her. But what I saw was that my sister was able to feel really, really angry, but not direct it at anyone. And Matthew was able to be with her anger and told her it was absolutely okay that she was angry. And he kind of went up behind her where she was chopping, and he kind of held her in her body as a kind of way to say, I can take this and I'm not going to get angry too. But I really appreciate that you're angry. And then she had a really, really big cry and kind of like breathed and kind of collapsed in not onto the floor, but like into his arms. And I thought, my goodness, like what a different relationship to anger might be possible if we might in our own lives be present to anger in ourselves, firstly, and be able to feel it rather than only express it at someone, like what the world might be like. And also then if we did that, maybe it means we could be present to other people's anger, so that whatever the gift is, because there were gifts in my sister's anger. She had like wisdom coming out. But if everybody gets kind of triggered and gets into like a huge big mess, those gifts are often not available, because it turns into what's going on in our relationship. Why are you so angry with me? Blah, blah, blah. And it really keeps kind of popping back into my mind. I felt like, my goodness, this is a really important moment in my life. And I was sitting on the sofa just watching this play out, knowing that people have things with one another and it's not mine to make it all better. And, you know, I've learned that over the time, like people have things with one another that I have to let them work out. Even if I'm feeling worried, I can be present to other people's wrangles and not try and fix it. So I was doing that thing. And then this thing that emerged felt so validating of when that uprising comes and we feel so passionately about something, and so much injustice and so much rage, but that it has pearls in it. And I feel like this is what this is talking about. It's like that there are things that we see and things that we feel that spark us into this place. And how might we be present in a way that lets the pearls come forth rather than dismiss it, be ashamed of it, shame it, push it away, deny it's there, go blank. You know, I know that's one of the things I've done, is just ignore it. And it just feels like turning towards this source of life, particular source of life, has so much in it. If we can be with it, and not push it away, and not deny it, and not be reactive in it. And I just feel like it's a really important conversation to always be in.
Lizzie, your microphone is just rustling against your hair, I think.
There we go.
Yeah, that's better. Yes, I think one of the things I'm reflecting on as you're talking is that one of the difficulties with anger is, there's lots of different dimensions to this, but the one that I'm tuning into now is how difficult it is for us to be present with it, both in often in ourselves, which is what leads to a kind of unattuned, you know, if I get angry and I flip out and I use my anger as a way of having power over you, which is, I think, where the gender thing comes in, because of the historical power imbalance between genders, that men's anger has been legitimized and women's anger has been delegitimized in our culture, and then it becomes a power issue. But if I step aside from that for a moment and imagine those situations where we're not trying to have power over one another, which of course can happen in many relationships too, it seems to me that the biggest part of our responsibility here is when another is angry, is to see if we can relax all the moves that we make to say, that's not okay. I can't take it. You can't take it. We can't take it. I will shame you. I'll silence you. I'll silence myself. I'll be angry in response to your being angry. And then that will save us, I suppose, from the tender, vulnerable contact that we can make with one another. Because when so often what happens when someone is angry is something that really matters is at stake. Something that we hold very, very dear and very tenderly is at stake. And our anger is from it having been transgressed in a way that another person might not know and understand. So this whole sort of dance we move of avoidance, of which anger as a response to anger, it seems to me, is just another avoidant move. that is only when we can start to find, maybe one way of talking about it is find within ourselves the part of ourselves that we know to be indestructible. And again, I want to separate anger from violence. You know, there are so many circumstances in which anger leads to violence, and I'm not talking about that moment. I'm talking about the moment when anger gets felt and gets expressed, and then we have the opportunity to take some responsibility for what we do. And in the example that you've just been talking about from your own experience, seems to me that the real gift in that was whatever it was that happened that allowed anger to be true and present, but not to turn into violence towards oneself or towards another, is the way in which we give the possibility for one another's anger, the wisdom that's in one another's anger, to show up. And that's it's a great responsibility on behalf of everybody who's involved. So if I'm angry in the first place, I have to find a way of, it's an act of care to bring it in a way that isn't destructive simply because I feel angry, but is nevertheless truthful. And it's an act of care on whoever is receiving and listening to do their best to stay present so that we can stay in contact with one another and not fly apart at that point. And it's really hard for many of us because we've had experiences about what anger can do, or because we've learnt that, you know, we've been socialized into anger is dangerous, anger is unwelcome because you're this or that kind of person.
Yeah. I was just thinking, Justin, I was at a party last night and nobody was angry. It's like anger isn't part of the narrative of what it means to be a socialized person. So it's one of those things that has to go undercover because of this cultural norm that you're talking about, of like, mm-hmm. it's one of the things that you don't bring out. And also the kind of relationships that we're all cultivating all the time. Like, I think I can, I don't know, count on one hand, and that's about it, the amount of people I can really be angry with. Not angry with them, but like when they're there, mm-hmm. without it meaning that I think the relationship would end. So I think it's also there's a quality of anger that can also be the thing that's saved up for our closest and dearest and nearest because of the way that our broader community relationships exist, where it's all very nice and very polite. And, you know, you and I both live in the land of England, where also there's a kind of cultural norm of just keeping everything buttoned down or something. And it just occurs to me how unusual it is to be able to feel angry in the presence of others and in a family as well. You know, it can be not just be never appropriate other than when you're a toddler and you're given a bit of leeway because you're so young or something. And it really does need an opening in the world, like this beautiful poem, because it's so part of our everydayness as humans, and to deny that and to push it away and pretend is quite, it's just occurring to me, it's like it's odd that we do that. It's a bit like crying. People say, come on, pull yourself together. It's the same thing. It's like if somebody's feeling something that isn't acceptable to me in myself, I have to shut it down in them somehow, or walk away or get away from it or something. So I'm really appreciating this invitation that this is making and that you're making, Justin, to be present to, and to each find a way to be in this so that actually a really radically different conversation gets permission to happen. Because it's how many conversations don't get to happen because this isn't welcome, that this isn't acceptable, therefore we can't have that conversation. So I'm really grateful. And also there's a truthfulness about anger, that if there is anger between us, for example,
there's a way that it also, because it's so pushed away in our culture, there's a way that it also gives me faith that our relationship's actually got substance to it. That if we could find a way to feel responsibly and to not intentionally hurt one another with our anger, it feels like a great freedom in relationship to be able to bring that and to feel safe in feeling what I'm feeling rather than what I should be feeling or what's acceptable to feel, but being real about it.
I think that's where the, I think maybe one of the reasons why anger is so tricky is because it's a very forceful kind of emotion. It has enormous, it's got the energy to break through. It's got the energy to upend things. It's got the energy to turn things upside down and inside out. It's, in a way, it's a very creative force, anger, because its move is to not have things be as they are.
Yeah.
And I've just been wondering, as you've been talking, you said, you know, our wider culture in the wider culture that we live is to button up anger, but we also live in a time where the unrestrained expression of anger is really taking up a new place in our culture in very destructive ways, I think. And I think that there's a way sometimes that what happens with us with anger is it fuels our sense of, it can fuel my sense of being big and giant, and I don't have to listen to you, and I don't have to, if I'm angry, it will save me. So if I'm angry with you, there are all the things we've been talking about so far, which is, can you be present with my anger? Can I be present with my anger? Or will we turn away? But in fact, one of the ways that we turn away is to kind of lose ourselves in our anger. So if I just stay really angry with you, Lizzie, I don't have to listen to you and I don't have to know the impact on you. I can just sort of charge through you and past you, and I can feel my own, it's a sort of egocentric kind of anger. I can feel my own righteousness, self-righteousness. So I'm just struck as we're talking about the connection between anger and tenderness and anger and openness and anger and vulnerability, that when anger has its place, if I feel angry, I can feel my anger, I can express it, and hopefully in a way that is not intended to cause you damage or hurt. That's the violence part of it. But I can name it, and to the extent to which you're able to hear it and stay present with it, something can happen between us that won't happen if we do the thing that I got very used to doing, very small, and many of us did, which was pretending not to be angry. Like, I will never, ever, ever show that I'm angry, which of course keeps what's true away and keeps me at a distance from you in exactly the same way that being over angry in a sort of immature way does. And that's why when we started this conversation, I found myself saying, mature kind of anger,
mm-hmm.
because it's the anger that brings us both into contact with one another and then lets us stay there for long enough that something new can emerge. So as you're saying, it seems right to me that it is a turning towards, but probably not the kind of turning towards that happens when we bring our anger without care for those with whom we're in relationship with whom we're angry with.
Yeah. And it's a really tricky one. Like, as you're talking, you said the word righteousness, and we've talked about rightness here before. I know that when I'm in that place where I'm angry and I feel right, it's so hard to walk back in the room again. Like, it's so hard. And as you say, it kind of, there's something egotistical about it that is bolstering, and if I really look, there's a vulnerability that's being covered up, or an emotion that's being covered up, or something beneath that I find really hard to get to, and therefore I stay in my angry, righteous place, because however horrible I feel, it's much easier for me to do that. And it's really hard to turn back around again, walk back in the room and say, I want to be in relationship here, not my own red hot mess in the other room. And so I really acknowledge that in all of us, how hard this dynamic is of triggering one another and feeling angry and expressing it and not being terribly responsible about it. And it is a conundrum. And I also know it's possible. I know I've done it and I know I can. And the more, you know, like we talk about like a practice, the more I do it, the more it becomes possible.
Right.
It feels like I've had enough evidence of walking back in the room and it being okay, than if I haven't had any evidence at all, and therefore I don't know that that's an okay thing to do. Because it feels so safe to be angry. It feels so safe to be righteous. Like I'm independent and I know what's going on. And so the vulnerability of kind of entering back into relationship again in a caring way, as you say, caring for another person and also caring for myself. Because it's not, I can tell it's not good for my body. It's not good for my well-being to feel like that and to let it continue for a long time. And there are some times when I stay angry for like 2 days or something about something. And it takes my nervous system and my hormones and everything like a long time to dissipate and find another level again. So I want to say that, because I think, you know, anybody listening might be thinking, oh, the, you know, it sounds like a simple move or something, and it's not. It's really hard. And it is a conundrum, because in relationship we're all connected to one another. So it takes, I think, beginning with our own inner work is the only place to start. It begins here. And for our own inner work to go, I'm really angry and I feel really right now. What am I afraid of? What am I really feeling? What are the injustices? What's happening to me in my body? Like asking some questions might be really, really helpful, and having the kind of relationship that's outside where I'm angry, to be able to process it and find a deeper place of contact, is so facilitating of coming back into the room again, as it were.
Yes. It strikes me, Lizzie, as someone who, like many people, learnt never to express anger, to pretend that I don't feel it, and to be really, 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 really angry in that sort of self-righteous but very, very quiet way. The inner work that you're talking about is so important, which is a kind of cultivation, I think, like you'd cultivate a plant or something. We can learn to discriminate and to discern and to find out the care and the truthfulness in it. But it's also striking me how important it is for us to see if we can find people who will be present with us with our anger without joining in the triggering that comes with it.
Yeah.
So it might be the person that I'm angry with. I mean, I suppose that's the place. Like if you and I have some anger between us, then if we can work it out between us, then that's a magical place to cultivate this. We don't always have that. So to have other people that we can bring our anger to and who won't just try and shut us down, or who won't join, and this is the thing about anger, is it's sort of contagiousness, who won't join in the emotional contagion of the anger, but equally won't make us try to put it away, but will simply help us to be in contact with what's true in it and with what's overblown in it, and help us discern the truthfulness. So this is the other way we've talked about this before, is right sizing, so that we find the place that is true, that's not a sort of puffed up, overdone thing, and not a diminished something.
Yeah.
And if we can have community or other people around us who can help us to do this, we also have a much better chance. It is hard to do on our own. And I think we can do it on our own, but it's always much more powerful in relationship. That's why I've been so glad to be in the community of development, where it's possible to explore these things over time.
Mm. Absolutely. Me too.
So I know that there's so much more. There's always so much more we could talk about. I feel like we are just beginning on this rich conversation about anger, and it's already half an hour in, so it's time for us to end, but maybe we'll circle round to this another time. I'm sure we will in the next 100 weeks.
Yes.
So I want to say thank you, everyone, for joining us again this Sunday morning. I want to end by reminding you that if you are around on the 23rd and 24th of September and you happen to be near London, you want to come and learn with us, I'm going to be running our 2-day Foundations of Coaching program, and you can contact us to find out more if you're interested. And otherwise, we will be back for week 101 next Sunday morning.
Ooh, 101. How exciting. Thanks, everybody, for being here. We'll see you next week.
Yeah, see you then. Bye-bye.
Bye.